7 lutego 2015 roku Towarzystwo Domu Polskiego i Konsulat Republiki Polskiej w Seattle zorganizowali historyczną prezentację polskich dzieci z Syberii uratowanych przez Japonię w latach 1920-1923. W uroczystości wzięli udział konsul generalny Japonii w Seattle Masahiro Omura i konsul honorowy Republiki Polskiej w Seattle Teresa Indelak Davis. Podczas programu Marta Gołubiec przedstawiła wykład na temat historycznego kontekstu wydarzeń i historii polskich sierot z Syberii w czasie rewolucji rosyjskiej. Setki z nich znalazło schronienie w Japonii, skąd niektóre popłynęły do Ameryki, a potem wróciły do Polski. W latach 1920-1921 około 350 dzieci przypłynęło na 6 statkach z Yokohamy do portu w Seattle. Każda grupa dzieci została powitana przez członków Domu Polskiego, którzy zapewnili im opiekę w czasie krótkiego pobytu w Seattle. 4 lipca 1921 roku historyczne zdjęcie z 50 dziećmi, 25 chłopców i 25 dziewcząt oraz 5 opiekunów z 5. transportu na japońskim statku Fushimi Maru upamiętnia ich wizytę w Domu Polskim. Historyczne znaczenie tego zdjęcia zostało odkryte przez Martę Gołubiec i kilka lat temu z pomocą Biblioteki Uniwersytetu Waszyngtońskiego i jednej z córek uratowanego natknęła się na książkę profesora Wiesława Tisa Dzieci syberyjskie. Ta książka pomogła rzucić światło na historię dzieci i ich tranzytu poprzez Seattle. Anna Domaracka była gościem honorowym tego programu. Dzieliła się osobistymi wspomnieniami o uratowanym przez Japonię ojcu Leopoldzie Kuleszy. Dzięki staraniom Japonii ponad 800 polskich dzieci z Syberii otrzymało drugą szansę w życiu, uciekając przed rewolucją, biedą, chorobami, głodem i bezdomnością. Podczas uroczystości konsul generalny Omura podkreślił historię przyjaznych stosunków polsko-japońskich, a konsul Teresa Indelak Davis wyraziła wdzięczność Polaków, którzy nigdy nie zapomnieli historii, która jest inspirującym przykładem przyjaźni między ludźmi i narodami.
It's my great pleasure to welcome to the Polish Cultural Center Consul General of Japan Masahiro Omura and Hiro Polakam. Also welcome Honorary Consul of Poland Teresa Indelak Davis. Special guest Anna Domaracka and her husband. Marta Gołubiec, President of Polish Ladies and Gentlemen. And all guests from Polish and Japanese community. Also, welcome. And now it's my great honor to introduce to the stage General Consul of Japan, Masahiro Omura.
Good afternoon. The Honorable Teresa Davis, Miss Martha Gołubiec, and Miss Anna Domaracka, friends of Polish community, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for your kind invitation. It is a great honor and pleasure to attend this special presentation as a representative of Japan. When I heard from Council Davis about this history of the Polish orphans stranded in Siberia in the early 20th century, I greatly sympathized. As I learned more about this episode and the key role that the government and people of Japan played in ensuring the orphans' safe return to Poland, I felt special pride. Ms. Gobiech, your efforts to uncover and share this important piece of history is commendable. I congratulate you on the successful completion of your painstaking but worthwhile endeavor. Poland and Japan established diplomatic relations in 1919, just a year before the first group of the Polish orphans arrived in my country. Our countries have enjoyed a wonderful relationship over the years. Recently, our Prime Minister Shinzo Abe visited Poland to meet with Prime Minister Donald Tusk in June 2013. Prime Minister Abe's wife Akie visited Poland last November on the invitation of the Polish government. This active and wonderful relationship wouldn't have been possible without the goodwill and friendship shared between the peoples of both countries, exemplified by this history. It is my sincere hope that our ties will be further strengthened as we approach the 100-year anniversary of our country's exceptional friendship. Thank you very much.
Honorable Consul General Masahiro Omura, thank you so much for being here and for your thoughtful message that will carry on for a long time with our community. We really appreciate you being here. We are here today to commemorate the historic events of Japanese rescue of Polish children from Siberia between the years 1920 to 1923. To learn more about this fascinating yet very little known story, I would like to invite to the podium Martha Gołubiec, who has researched this story thoroughly. She is the president of Polish Ladies Auxiliary at the Polish Home Association, and we'd like her to say a little bit more about how the story is tied to our Polish community and the Japanese rescue. Thank you.
Sometimes we have questions. We look at photographs that are not marked on the back, the name of the person, the child, and we sort of wonder, who are these people? Well, downstairs in the lower hall, there's a very nice old photograph of the Polish hall from 1920, and we never knew who the children were in the center of the photograph. There were the founding fathers on the left, right, but in the center there was a group of children. They were all like in uniform, and we were wondering who these children are. So I asked some of the second, third generation Polish Americans out here, who are they? They didn't know. They had no clue. So we wondered for quite a long time. Sometimes in the mid-80s, I believe, Mr. and Mrs. Domaracki lived in Seattle, and Ania Domaracka, I befriended her, and we became friends for a long time now, and she said, you know, my father was one of the children transported from Siberia through Japan to Seattle. This was an eye-opener. So we finally found out that these children were Polish children from Siberia at the time approximately. Later on, her great help was she discovered a book that was written by Professor Theis in Poland, entitled Dzieci Syberyjskie, meaning Siberian children, and she borrowed the book. They lived down in Los Angeles under the USC, but he borrowed the book from Stanford. So when I heard about the book, I checked the University of Washington library, and they had it, so I borrowed it. And that is essentially the whole story of what happened in those tragic times in Russia and what happened to those children and the Polish families out there. But before I start the saga of this great odyssey, I thought I would mention that this is quite important because Poland is not a young country. It's been around since 1066. They had dynasties of kings for many, many centuries. They had Vasa kings also. They had Valois, Henry Valois. They had Saxon kings. because the Polish throne became elective. So what the nobles did is they got together like at a convention almost, and they were voting on whom to choose for the next king of Poland. So Poland became kind of frazzled to a point, fragmented, I should say. And it became kind of weaker with this process. They also had the veto power, which was totally different from all other veto powers. I'll not discuss it. But so what happened is Poland became weaker, and it was partitioned three times, starting in 1795, later on in the 19th century, by the Russian Empire, Austro-Hungarian Empire, and by the Prussians. So Poland gradually was sort of taken over by these three strong powers, which were their neighbors, essentially. So Poland ceased to be on the map of Europe, and the Poles became, I don't know, sort of, how should I say it? Citizens, I guess, of Russia, or citizens of Austria-Hungary, or citizens of Prussia. This is interesting that at the same time that a lot of Poles moved to various parts of Russia. And it wasn't that they sometimes wanted to, sometimes it was jobs, work. The Russians needed people who were engineers, who were scientists, who were mathematicians. They needed brain power. So it was a brain drain on Poland to a point, but these people needed employment also. So what did they do? Many of them worked in St. Petersburg. Many of them worked in Vladivostok or in other cities. So this is what happened. A lot of Poles moved to various areas of the Russian Empire simply because they worked. They had jobs there. It's like we moved to Seattle because of the Boeing company. That's why we're here. Interestingly enough, at this time in history, the United States was trying to settle the Western lands. When you think of the original 13 colonies, gradually, the United States evolved to the west, with the building of the railroads. So people moved out west. They were encouraged to homestead and settle in the western part of the United States. This was the same thing in Russia, which was interesting. At a similar time, they were building the Trans-Siberian Railroad. They wanted people to settle in the vast area of the Russian Empire. And when you think of it, the Russian Empire stretches, well, it was then from Warsaw, from the Baltic to the Bering Sea. It straddles Europe and Asia. So they had 11 time zones. So if you think of the United States, we have 4 time zones. Russia had 11. So it was quite a territory that they wanted to, develop and have people move in there. Interestingly enough, they also had homesteading. So there were some Poles that actually went to Siberia or other parts of Russia as homesteaders. Some Poles, because of after the partitions, there were insurrections, people rebelled in Poland. So the people that took part in the insurrections were exiled, banished to Siberia. Siberia became like a word for the gulag. If you were sent to Siberia, that meant you did something terrible, and you were banished there, exiled, and so forth. Interestingly enough, from this part of history, there was a Frenchman, de Tocqueville, who was in the United States, and he wrote a book, Democracy in America. And he was very optimistic about the country, developing, how its future would look. He was very optimistic. He's been quoted so many times in various books and magazines. There was another Frenchman, Marquis de Custin, who went to Russia, like de Tocqueville to the States. And he wrote, there's a book titled Letters from Russia. These were letters he sent to his wife. So he traveled through Russia, and his summation was very negative. He was wondering what would happen there. He didn't have a very positive view of the Russians and the Russian Empire. Some summarizing it in one sentence, these were people who didn't think. They were taught not to think, just do what they were told. So this is the story of of the history of approximately the, well, the end of the 17th century to the 18th century and 19th, and the beginning of the 20th is where we come in. And you'll see from this presentation how our lives have changed, and a lot of people that are here today know the story of other Siberians that were sent here in, later on after World War II. So this is the short, I'll try to make it short, presentation of the story. Keep in mind the Polish hall that is enlarged over there. And this is one photograph that we have, the only photograph of the children from Siberia that traveled through Seattle. Essentially what they did is they traveled through Seattle. It was not their destination. This is a close-up of the children. They all look like they're in uniforms. These were clothes that were provided by the Japanese. The journalist Teruo Matsumoto, both searched for survivors all over Poland. Mr. Matsumoto, most interested in Polish-Japanese relations, Professor Theis researching material for his book. 40 survivors came to Warsaw to tell their stories, so the book is based on actual experiences and stories of the people that went, who were the children at the time. There were 4 reunions that were organized by the Japanese embassy in Warsaw. The historical period, 1914, 1918, thank you. During World War I, there were dramatic changes in Europe. When you look at the map of Europe, what happened, it was very interesting. It was the fall of the Ottoman Empire and the Austro-Hungarian Empire. In Russia, in the Russian Empire, there was a revolution. There were a couple of revolutions, as a matter of fact. Total turmoil. Nations in Europe re-emerged. Poland became independent in 1918 through the Treaty of Versailles, and this was Woodrow Wilson's 14 points that made Poland again independent. There were other countries like Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, the Baltic countries, Czechoslovakia, and so forth and so on. So many of these countries came to be in 1918 after World War I. Poland regains its independence in 1918 and again is a sovereign country. In 1914, there were a lot of Poles in eastern Siberia. 50,000 of them lived in Russia and the Far East. Countless engineers worked on the construction of the Trans-Siberian Railroad. There were bankers, pharmacists, teachers, scientists, accountants, engineers that were employed. As I said, they were out there because they found work. Many were descendants of the exiles, as I mentioned, banished to Siberia. And there were some homesteaders, like in the United States, except it was not the same homesteading as we had it in the United States. The Polish communities in Siberia and Manchuria as well, there were some of them had Dom Polski like we have here in Seattle. They published newspapers, maintained Polish cultural heritage, celebrated Polish national holidays, maintained Polish language schools like here in Seattle, organized Polish scouts, and built a few Roman Catholic churches. So you can see that they were settled there. And some of them were there for a few generations. When you think of it, Poland was not independent for 5 generations. So there were generations of Poles in those areas who were there 2-3 generations, who knows. So they really settled and made themselves a community that they could work with and be at home with. In Vladivostok, of course, we call Polonia is essentially the Polish community. Polonia. Oops. Sorry. Poland regained independence after 123 years. Poland wanted Poles wanted to go now to the independent Poland and had no funds such as for such an endeavor. It was quite a distance, you know. Remember 11 time zones? Where's Poland and where is Manchuria and Siberia? The Polish Rescue Committee asked for Japanese help to take the children out of Russia because of proximity and because they shared a common enemy, Russia. I'm sorry we skipped a couple. I'm not a pro at this, as I said. But after the revolution wasn't just one. There were a couple of them. It was the Kerensky government and so forth. And it was just a slaughter of people. People were shipped to the Gulag. People were executed. The Russians had an incredible way of arresting people. They always came at night, never during the day. Always at night, 2, 3, 4 in the morning, when they knew people would be home and asleep. That's when they gathered them, that's when they took them away. And of course, this was a question of class struggle, because these were people who were educated, these were people, how should I say, creme de la creme in some societies, and this is something that was not to their liking, because with communism, you know, the peasants were the most important part of the country. This was Poland as it evolved in 1918. Those were the boundaries of Poland. There's Lithuania, Slovakia, Romania, and of course Russia on the left side. The October Revolution and others, civil war, anarchy, military terror, class enemies killed or imprisoned, famine. There was terrible famine because the peasants decided they're not going to work the farms or they're not going to contribute food to the people in the cities. There was poverty, disease, and homelessness. Polish children were taken from Lake Baikal all the way to Vladivostok and from Harbin in Manchuria. It's quite a territory if you look at the map. In 1922, there was the establishment of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. The revolutions, this is an interesting quotation from Adam Michnik, one of our Polish, I would say, activists, philosophers, writers, and so forth. Revolutions have two phases. First comes the struggle for freedom, then the struggle for power. The first makes the spirit soar and brings out the best in people. The second unleashes the worst: envy, intrigue, greed, suspicion, urge for revenge. So the Poles had the problem of having some revenge there. As you know, Tsar Nicholas and his whole family were executed, and Vladimir Ilyich Ulyanov Lenin became the leader of the USSR. He was followed by Stalin, who was no better. These are just some street scenes, and there's Lenin in the center. You can see the people on the street being killed, and revolution was, you know, today we're everything. Yesterday we were nothing, today we are everything. This is the Internationale that they always sang. What is interesting also is, later on, I'll just mention this was in the 30s, the communist government essentially starved to death around 10, 12 million people in the Ukraine, because the Ukrainian farmers didn't want to join the co-ops. So what they did is they took all their seed, everything that they had, and these people were just left with nothing to plant. So they starved millions of Ukrainians. Dr. Józef Jakubkowski, and some of you Polish members here, Polish guests, look at the spelling of Jakubkowski with the O with the accent on it. That is the way the name is spelled. Normally we spell Jakub with a U, without the, not the O with the accent on it. So this is the way it was spelled in the book. Together with Anna Gielkiewicz, organized the Polish Rescue Committee of Polish children from Siberia and Manchuria in October 1919. those who helped, and this was a tremendous effort. When you think of it, it isn't like, oh, let's get together and do something. This was an incredible amount of work, effort, and they needed funds. So those who helped was, of course, the Polish Rescue Committee, the Polish-American organizations, primarily PNA, Polish National Alliance, that's the abbreviation, the Japanese government, Ignacy and Helena Paderewski Fund, Polish White Cross, started by Helena Paderewski, and the Polish government, which was just forming. Poland was just starting to breathe a little, and they had very few funds to contribute. From Harbin in Manchuria and from Irkutsk to Vladivostok, children were rescued from railway stations, Russian orphanages, Chinese orphanages, city streets, small towns and villages. When you think of it, this was a tragedy of all these essentially children who were homeless, so they ended up in these various orphanages or just on the streets of various cities and towns. So the rescue committee gathered those children. These are Polish children in Vladivostok, in the good old days before all of these things happened. They're on these ships, they're leaving Vladivostok for Tsuruga in Japan, and they sang Boże coś Polskie, which is equivalent to God Bless America. That's our song. And then the Poles sing Boże coś Polskie. Fukudenkai Buddhist Orphanage in Tokyo and a hospital in Osaka. Many of these children were sick, so they ended up with typhoid, among others. A Japanese nurse died helping the children. So the children, depending on their state of health and physical endurance and so forth, were placed either in orphanages or placed in hospitals and nursed back to health. Polish children were cared for by the Japanese Red Cross. So these are some of the photographs that I got from the book and from the internet. Empress Sadoko visited the children and gave them kimonos and uniforms for the boys. When you think of it, an empress, especially in those days, was not somebody who just ventured out. It was quite unusual and very kind of her to maybe break the protocol and go and visit those children in those hospitals and orphanages. The first transports, there were three transports all total, okay? The first transports consisted of six ships, Japanese ships that sailed from Yokohama to Seattle. Those are the dates. The photograph that we have of the children at the Polish Hall was from Suwa Maru in June 12, 1920. They came here, and the picture was taken on the 4th of July. So that we guess that this is probably the children that arrived on that ship in 1920. When you think of it, six ships carried these children here. The long journey continues. From Seattle, the children traveled by train with stops in Chicago, and they went on to other cities on the East Coast and went then on to Europe. 57 children remained in the United States, of which 28 stayed with relatives. 29 boys went to the Polish National Alliance School in Cambridge Springs, Pennsylvania. What is interesting is some of these children, they were not just, we think of children as small. Some of them were a little older, so they were like teenagers. So they could probably maybe get jobs or fend for themselves, or they'd be taken in by families. So this is how the statistics show how many children stayed here in the United States. The second transport was in February 6, 1922, Katori Maru. 300 sailed from Kobe to Bremen, Germany. They sailed 63 days from Kobe to Hong Kong, Singapore, Colombo, Port Said. They went through the Suez Canal, Tunis, Lisbon, Southampton, England. When you think of it, what a trip that was. What an adventure for those kids. The Polish consulate in London and the Japanese Nippon Yusen Kasha Company transferred the children on the Baltonic of the United Baltic Line Limited, arriving in Gdańsk in November 1922. So this was the second transport. It was quite a large one. Katori Maru sailed in 1922 from Kobe to England. Third transport was by rail. The USSR agreed to the rail transport in return for safe rail travel from for Russian children from Czechoslovakia, which was, as you remember, part of the Russian Empire. So it was a deal that they made. 117 children and 14 adults. They traveled 9 days. Remember the 11 time zones? 9 days by train from Tsita to Moscow on the Trans-Siberian Railroad. They went from Moscow then to the Polish border, and don't forget the Russian railroads have a different system. They have the wide gauge, and the Polish railroads have the narrow gauge, which is standard European and in the United States as well. So that was another, it wasn't just getting the train to Poland all the way. They had to change trains on the border. Many of the children ended up in Wejherowo, Poland, which is right by Gdynia, which is our sister city, by the way. And they were housed there. Others were sent to other orphanages. And initially, some of those children had a very hard time because Poland was just beginning to be an independent country. It wasn't rich. So even those children were sort of complaining that they weren't fed that well, which is understandable. Poland didn't have the funds to feed all these children and so forth. What is interesting about all these transports is that in 1920, Russia attacked Poland. Poland was already independent, 1918. 1920, Russia attacked Poland. And under the command of Marshal Piłsudski, they were defeated. So the Russians took a good beating in 1920 from the Poles. So they sort of started mellowing down a little bit and letting those children leave, having those children leave on the Trans-Siberian Railroad. So I think that war helped mellow them down a bit and think in different categories. Organizations and reunions. What is interesting is they have, it's like, you know, you have your alma mater that has a reunion of your class or whatever, and you get together with all your friends and so forth. So in Poland, the Polish youth from the Far East, as they were called, met, they had, the center was in Warsaw. They had branches in Poznań, Lwów, Łódź, Gdynia. They promoted Japanese history and culture. Some of them spoke Japanese reasonably well. Children learn fast, not like adults. The Japanese embassy loaned films, books, etc., which many embassies do, to promote their specific culture, like the French have Alliance Française, and they have the British House in various countries as well. So they promoted Japanese culture and helped those children. They had Japanese language lessons. They had Night of the Cherry Blossoms and Night of the Chrysanthemums, were two elegant balls that were organized. Here is Jerzy Strzałkowski, who was one of those rescued children, and he thanks the Japanese Red Cross president, Keizo Hayashi, saying on behalf of the rescued Siberian Polish children, thank you for your devoted assistance. This is when I visited the Japanese consulate here, and we talked about this. I mentioned that Emperor Ahikito and Empress Michiko, they were in Poland in 2002, and they wanted to meet with some of those children who were now quite old. So some of them, three of them came to the Japanese embassy in Warsaw, and they met three of those children. This is a photograph of Anna Domaratska's father, who was one of the children, not in the photograph, but one of the transports that started essentially the search for the rest of the story of the children that came here. This is the Kulesha family. He left with two of his sisters, and that is the end of my presentation. However, before I introduce the lady who started all of this, I owe a special thank you to Eva Orłowska and Madi, who encouraged me, said, Martha, you have to do this. And sometimes we need a little push, you know. So, and of course, Teresa Davis, my friend here in cohort, without her, we probably wouldn't be getting together here today. So anyway, I thank you, Eva, for your graciousness, and thank you, Teresa, for being so patient with me. Thank you. So the story ends for me with meeting Anya Domaratska, and she's the one that started me on this search for the history of those children. Anya Domaratska, her maiden name was Kulesha. She now lives in Los Angeles, and she came especially for this presentation. Anya.
So thank you very much for a really wonderful presentation, Martha. That was historical aspect of this journey. I would like to say a few words about my family. This is rather short story, but that's how it started, with information given to Marta. My father was born in Siberia, nearby Harbin, on the station, railroad station in Buhedu, and my grandfather was a railroad worker when they started to build a railroad from Warsaw to Vladivostok. And somehow there was few legs of this big project, but somehow my grandfather landed in Siberia. And on the way, my father was born, but earlier, two of his sisters, my father was born in 1908, older sister, 1904, and older one in 1905. After grandfather was in charge of payroll for railroad workers, and later, as they moved farther and farther, he had something similar to cafeteria. He was giving food to all workers. That was kind of prosperous, but really difficult. When they moved from Harbin to Błagowieszczeńsk, that was the next big stop for entire railroad company, he provided for few years food for people, but somehow it got too difficult, and it was just for one family too much, too difficult work, so he decided to move along with railroad to Vladivostok, where was the end of the Vladivostok, that's where they stopped. And grandfather went to work for bank. They had decent life. That's the family of my grandfather. My father is in the middle. children went to regular Russian schools. I mean, the older one, my aunt, the second one, and my father. That was the regular school, but also in, as Marta told us, in Vladivostok there was a Polish home and Polish school. They had about 120 school children, and this home was pretty active, very active rather. My grandfather and grandmother belonged to Polish home. When all that difficult time started to be even more difficult for them, when the Bolsheviks started to introduce new rules, about 10 of, I don't know exact the number, but about 10 of the people from Polish home decided to write a letter and send to Warsaw to inform new Polish government about difficult situation in Siberia, especially Polish community. But they sent this letter to Poland, but on the way, not far away from Błagowieszczeńsk, Bolsheviks were able to, get this letter and came back to a Polish home. There was, my grandfather was sent to prison for about 8 years. I don't know about rest of the workers, but he was the one who got prison for 8 years. And from that moment, from perspective of the family, it was really difficult to, because actually family lost everything. Bolsheviks took, he was working in the bank, was very well off, had good work, but suddenly everything was shattered. Grandfather was in jail, and there was this Polish relief committee. So they decided, I mean, my grandmother and grandfather decided to send children to Poland through the continent. That was impossible. So they took advantage of the possibility to sending children to Poland through Japan, United States, and then they landed in Bremen, through Berlin, to Poznań, and Gdańsk, Wejherowo. Well, in as Marta told us, in 1920, when Piłsudski got successful in this war, there was a lot of Bolsheviks, which the government decided to exchange for people in jails in Russia. And my grandfather was among one of them for personal exchange. Actually, it was 1923, and he was sent in the carriage with guards to the entire continent back to Poland. When he crossed Polish border, it was in Stołpce. He even kissed the Polish soil. He was so happy finally that he came back from where he belonged. And my father, with his two sisters, went through Japan, through Tokyo. That was the first transport, but the group of children who were housed in Tokyo, then they, on the ship, they moved to Seattle here,
And my father was sent to New Britain, Connecticut for about 8 months. He was in school in an orphanage. Two older sisters, they were separated and they went to Pennsylvania. After 8 months, they, like I said, the kids were children. On another ship, they were sent to Poland, in Becherowo, where they got education. Both of my aunts, they became teachers. My father in Poznań, he got, he was a gardener. And before Second War, they really had a chance for good life. They work hard, they used to work hard, they know what it takes to succeed, but then Second War started and everything went differently than they expected. I guess that's the story of my family.
Maybe I have one more question for you, Anna. Could you tell us a little bit more about how your father remembered his experience during the time he was in Japan? Or has he talked about that period?
Mm-hmm. Actually, that was the very nice memory of my father. He was always telling about how wonderful this country is, because that was the first time when he left Russia, Vladivostok, and he was able to see something else. The memories goes when, especially somehow I remember what he told me, this visit in orphanage, when the Empress came to visit them, there was a group of young children, girls and boys. She was so nice, she took I think one or two girls and even closer to put on her laps, and she was, you know, very happy with all the blonde children just patting on the head. That's what my father was telling me. He remembered few Japanese words. He was able to count from 1 to 10. Just arigato, bonzai, ichini, and so on. Just great memories from Japan. That was only 4 months, but for them very memorable.
Thank you again very much. Thank you very much for our distinguished guests for coming. Thank you to the Polish and Japanese community for being here. And thank you, Anna and Martha, for preparing this inspiring and little known story that now we know a little bit more about and we can continue our education.